The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
And we're here off the back of a really packed weekend of sports, so it's great to be joined by Eoghan Sheehan from Off the Ball. We better start with Kilkenny. I mean, that's the big headline, isn't it, of the week? Defeat to Dublin in Parnell Park. So what happened?
Well, Dublin were really good yesterday. First of all, I thought that as the game was going to edge towards the last 20 minutes and Kilkenny got it back to within a couple of points, I just kind of had this feeling that Kilkenny were going to pull away. Dublin have a desperate record against Kilkenny, and you think that the tradition is going to come to the fore again, but this Kilkenny team isn't the Kilkenny team of 10 years ago. And perhaps this Dublin team is better than anything we've seen, even including the one that won the Leinster Championship, which still has a couple of those players, the likes of Liam Rush, for example, from that generation. He's back in the side and brings that experience. There's a case to be made that this Dublin generation of hurler is actually better than that, and they're very much on the upward trajectory, despite how last year season went for them. Now, last year they beat Limerick in the All-Ireland quarter-final and then were hockeyed by Cork in the All-Ireland semi-final. So it was hard to get a read on where they really were. But actually, I think as the season goes on, maybe the big story yesterday might actually be Dublin and where they're at as a hurling county.
Because I think you're right in what you say, that you always, when you're watching Kilkenny in a situation like that, you always expect them to pull away, you know, to go into the next gear, and it looks effortless and all that, and it just didn't happen.
It much like the Dubs the previous week against Westmeath, you just kind of thought that would happen. But things change, generational talents retire, generational teams go by the wayside. And there's going to be a lot of soul searching going on in Kilkenny at this stage. Like, is there going to be a change of management? Is there going to be a change of coaching team? I don't know, because it does feel that when you talk to people and you listen to anybody talk about this team, the players don't appear to be there. Now, this season didn't get off to the best start for Kilkenny. They lost a few of their players just due to the fact that they wanted to go off and travel. And the likes of Hugh Lawler, for example, their brilliant fullback, went off to Australia. There was a brilliant piece of local radio commentary in Kilkenny from Andy Comerford, who said, "We have beaches in Tremore. What are you going down to Australia for? We have the beach here." And that kind of...
That's what your parents say to you when you talk about, you know, wanting to see the world. Sure, what would you want to be going? Haven't we lovely blue skies here and rain and everything?
And look, the beach would have been beautiful yesterday as well after Kilkenny played that game. So maybe he had a point, but I'm just making that reference because there were red flags raised early on in this campaign about where Kilkenny were at and the players that were available to them. And the writing was on the wall a little bit. But still, the Leinster Championship should be something that Kilkenny are qualifying from every single year.
And you were at Kerry Donegal. Do you want to talk about that?
I do. I've a lot to say, Claire. No, I think there's been so much said about this already. Like, what I would say is that when you're at a game, you do tend to be able to trust your gut a lot more with regards to what the big talking points are. And one of the big talking points after the game, because of his interaction certainly with Tommy Rooney of Off the Ball, was Jim McGuinness and him putting his hands on a Kerry player. And it was just really interesting because at that moment when I saw it happen on the pitch, I thought to myself, wow, that is beyond the pale. What we've just seen there, that is absolutely the same as Ger Brennan a couple of weeks ago in terms of being in a space of a mentor being on the field and interacting with somebody he shouldn't be. And I was thinking in that moment, before the second half even started, before the red card was shown, that he's going to be in hot water here. And so it transpired after the game that became a big talking point. McGuinness did not take the questions well at all, got very, very defensive about it, suggested that Tommy was trying to get him banned. He suggested that Tommy was trying to fly a kite and suggesting that he was going out of his way to get the manager banned, which I thought was a really poor reaction from Jim. Blood was high. Went into attack dog mode a lot. And look, he's not the only manager who would react like that. The banished door tends to have a bit about him when it comes to going after journalists in the GAA. And again, I'm not referring to McGuinness there solely. So you're not surprised by his reaction, but his reaction could have been a little bit better. That is not to excuse what happened prior to that at all. Like Micheál Burns, who got sent off for Kerry, deserved to get a red card, deserved to get a couple of red cards for giving Ryan McHugh a pretty awful dig, an uppercut really. Like it was a nasty moment. And you can see why McGuinness was furious. But particularly after what we've seen with Ger Brennan over the last, at the end of the National League, to be a manager and to encroach onto the field and then to push, to shove a player is really ill-advised.
It's out of bounds. And you've got to be able to take questions on it as well. That's
100%.
That's part of your gig, you know, it's part of your job. Now, Cork beat Clare, Limerick beat Tip. So we have a massive showdown now coming up for the Munster final in 2 weeks' time, isn't it?
2 weeks' time, exactly. So it's going to be Cork against Limerick once again on Sunday at 2 p.m. is the fixture there on the 7th of June.
Day.
Yeah, it will. Like they've met so much now in the last couple of years, and even when they played each other earlier on in this round robin, you kind of felt to yourself this could be the first of three matches between them this year. But we don't really tire of them at all. And I think whoever wins this is going to celebrate it correctly in a wild manner, just like Cork did last year after they beat them on penalties. I think Limerick would love to get the Munster crown back after what happened last year. And I think Cork would love to make it two in a row. So I don't think that this is diminished in any way by the fact that there could be a third, even bigger game between the counties in late June or even in July. So I cannot wait for this. I think they are the two best teams in the country at the moment. I still think Clare might have a say as the summer goes on. I know they were very poor yesterday and they were beaten soundly, but I think they might well have a say as the season goes on. I think we've probably learned over the last couple of weeks that we can't 100% trust Galway after they beat Kilkenny well at the start of the campaign. We thought they might have a say. I do think the All-Ireland champions are going to come from Munster again this year. It was Clare, it was Tip, and I think it's going to be one of Cork or Limerick who are going to win the title this year.
A listener says the myth about Kilkenny's superiority in hurling persisted long after they were past their best. I don't know. I mean, they still give them the hurls, don't they, before they wean them?
Yeah. Kilkenny. They really do. I think that texter has a really good point. I think that a lot of teams, when Kilkenny were on the downward slope, found it much more difficult to beat them just because of the black and amber and just because of who they were. And there's a few games that they have won by dint of the fact that they are Kilkenny and they carry that aura. But that aura diminishes over a period of time. It takes a number of years. And I think this is probably the lowest point that we've seen in the modern day when it comes to Kilkenny hurling.
Well, speaking of winning auras, I felt yesterday, I caught a bit of the ceremony where Arsenal got the Premier League trophy yesterday, which I'm sure you were very happy to see. But they'll carry that now, won't they, into the Champions League final on Saturday?
Yeah, like monkey off the back is the cliche I'd use around this moment yesterday with Arsenal, because I think when you look at this weekend in Budapest, I just thought that game would have taken on a whole different hue with regards to pressure if Arsenal hadn't won the Premier League title. Because if they weren't to have won the Premier League title this year, it would have come in a quote-unquote bottle job manner because of the fact that they were ahead by so much. But the fact that they did fall over the line, they did get the job done, I think the pressure is completely off this team. They played their second team yesterday. If you want to predict Arsenal starting 11 for Saturday, just look at the players who didn't start yesterday, basically. So they're going to be rested up. I know a lot of their frontliners did come on and play in the second half, but they're also just buoyed by what's happened over the course of the last week or so. And they're going to be underdogs for this fixture on Saturday. They're up against one of the best teams we've ever seen in club football. And I think that is the perfect scenario for a Mikel Arteta ambush. Because while he has been criticised all season long for a fairly reductive style of football, a reductive style of football might just be the thing that identifies an Achilles heel in PSG, or it might frustrate PSG. And who knows, I'm not writing Paris Saint-Germain's name into the trophy just yet, even though they are strong favourites.
All right, well, that's coming up on Saturday. And then Manchester City, like Pep Guardiola and Bernardo Silva getting that guard of honour in the middle of the game. Wayne Rooney wasn't impressed. Here's what he had to say on Match of the Day.
It just makes me sad that some of these things happen in football. And Bernardo Silva, John Stones have been incredible for Manchester City and they deserve it, but do it after the game. If I was in that Aston Villa team, I'd be fuming.
So was it right? Was it wrong?
I think in the middle of the game is a bit ridiculous. There was a separate moment after the game, which I think was appropriate. I don't have any problem whatsoever with that sort of thing occurring on an opposition's ground. I think that's just the way the fixtures go. But any sort of halftime interaction on that level does feel a bit jarring, or mid-game interaction like that is a little bit weird. Wayne Rooney's a brilliant pundit and I think he probably has a point here. Maybe it feels a little bit old school at times when he's speaking, but when you actually dig beyond what he's saying, I think it's hard to disagree with him on a lot of what he's saying. Now, Aston Villa, much like Arsenal, were in pretty good form yesterday, so maybe they rolled over and allowed things to happen in that game with Manchester City that they wouldn't ordinarily do. But yeah, at the Etihad yesterday, I think they were happy enough to let the City do what they did, and they have their Europa League medal from midweek, so I think they were content enough.
And then poor old West Ham relegated, and their captain Jarrod Bowen saying that he's going to stay on to bring them back up. That's a really tough gig though, isn't it?
It is, and Jarrod Bowen didn't make the England squad this week either, so he's had a doubly tough week as a footballer. Like a few weeks ago, we did think that West Ham were going to stay up. We did think that Tottenham Hotspur were going to go down, and in fairness to Spurs, They have dug it out at the end, but you can't compliment them too much, to be honest, because they should never have been in that place. Christian Romero, their captain, was due to go to Argentina last week to watch his boyhood club Belgrano play in a title decider against River Plate. Naturally, the reaction to that was not good. He is injured, but the thoughts of your captain leaving the country to go back home to Argentina when your team is playing essentially a relegation playoff, it was met with a bit of a furious response. But he was there yesterday. He did show up, and he was right in the middle of the celebrations after Joao Palhinha's winner. His sunglasses actually went flying. I think he did lose a pair of sunnies yesterday in the celebration. But I think it just kind of sums up, that one moment sums up where Tottenham are at. Like, congratulations, well done, you've survived in the Premier League. But there are so many questions about the culture in that club.
Leinster, like, I mean, it was a trouncing, really, wasn't it? 41-19 to Bordeaux. Were you expecting that gap between the tallies there?
No, I was not. I thought Leinster had a decent chance of running them very, very close, but that just didn't materialise whatsoever. I think when you're down, 35-7 at half time, you're in hot water, and Bordeaux just really showed their complete class. I think the question that you asked there about the expectation, I think that's an important one. I think we need to remember how we felt about this game beforehand when we actually make a judgment on this game, because I just kind of get the sense that people will rush to the conclusion that Leinster can't hold a candle to a team like Bordeaux. And I just don't think that's the truth. I think that the players that Leinster have, like the bulk suppliers, not only to the Ireland team, but to the British and Irish Lions last year in their tour of Australia, that team should be capable of competing against any other club team in the world. And Leinster didn't compete. The game was over at halftime. And while, you know, Leo Cullen will come out and give Bordeaux their deserved flowers, they are an amazing team, Leinster should be able to compete with them. And if they aren't in a process of, to use that phrase again, soul searching over the course of this off season, then they're not doing their jobs right. And like, everybody has a contract, I think, for the guts of another year. The likes of Cullen, the likes of Nian Abber. So you wouldn't expect there to be any sort of abrupt change on that front. But there is going to be a change when it comes to their out halves, for example. Kieran Frawley was introduced very early in the game on Saturday. Is he potentially Leinster's best out half? There's an argument to be made, and he's being shipped off to Connacht now while Joey Carberry's coming into the province. I'm just very reluctant to go too big on Bordeaux being amazing, even though they are. Leinster should also be able to compete with them, and they let themselves down. And, you know, the fact that they've lost five finals on the bounce at this stage, that counts for something as well. So I hope internally those questions are being asked, because they can't really just get by saying, we're grand being the second best team in the continent.
But you would expect that they would be. Listen, the enhanced games are on in Las Vegas. I'm torn between wanting to ignore it completely because it is a clown show, as we said earlier on. But then there was an interesting result from Fred Kerley. I mean, he moved to the games. He won the 100 metres on a time of 9.97 seconds. Mm-hmm. Had he ran that race in the Olympics, he would have come last.
Yeah.
So the drugs don't work, kids.
Yeah, or maybe everybody's doing them and the doctors in the enhanced games just aren't as good as the doctors in the Olympic games. He wasn't anywhere close to his own PB even. So his PB is 9.76. So he was short of that, actually. So mm-hmm. Even by his own standards, it wasn't good enough. We have got one world record. So this is Christian Golomiev from Greece. He's the only athlete so far to have beaten a world record. He's 32 years old. He clocked 20.81 in the men's 50-metre freestyle. And that world record was 28.8, is 28.8. That is the official world record. This is not an official world record. So we don't know for sure what he took.
They don't tell us, do they not?
I think we can ask and they can tell if they want to, but I think it's still pretty much in-house. We know what they're allowed to take. Mm-hmm. So I think it'll take a couple of interviews. I'm sure we'll reach out to Shane Ryan, for example, this week to speak to him, because
it's grotesque, isn't it?
A little bit. But when we spoke to him back in whatever it was, October, November, he was telling us that I don't know what I'm going to take. He wasn't sure if he was going to put HGH or EPO into his body. He was going to wait to do a few more tests and then maybe load up on something before the games. But he didn't commit to anything. But you can take anything: testosterone, anabolic steroids, peptides, the whole lot, as long as it's FDA approved. And I suspect a lot of stuff is FDA approved in the United States. It's all kosher, basically.
Okay. Owen, thanks so much.
Thanks,
and we'll talk to you on Friday.
Yep.
Owen Chain will be back with us on Friday.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.